So is there a key? Do these things kind of just spontaneously spring up? Or is there, and I guess you're saying, is there something we should do? Is there something we could do? Yeah, so I don't think it's secret. So, or a hidden key kind of thing. I think it's been given to us. But with people like Evan Roberts, if you go right back, or Seymour, the two kind of principal characters in this, in the early part of this story, they had encounters with God that were phenomenal, and they wouldn't give up. So there's a kind of perseverance factor, and there's an encounter with God factor that I think we need to be reminded of ourselves. It's great that, you know, I was baptized in the Spirit in 1984. And that was good. It was really good. You were not born. You were three. Okay. Paul wants us to know that he was three in 1984. That's great. But that's great that I was baptized in the Spirit back then, and it was one of the, it was the most powerful experience, of course. I mean, conversion was the most significant experience, but baptism in the Spirit didn't take anything away from that. It actually enhanced that. It was an incredible thing. And then later, and even recently, I've been filled again with the Holy Spirit. The thing is, we need to be filled with the Spirit more and more and more. You know, we get these reminders and we can look back at the story and think, oh, isn't that great? But when was the last time you were really overwhelmed with God's love to the point of just knowing, wow, there's nothing else worth doing? I mean, you know, when was the last time you received the power of God? We've pared these things down. I mean, Jesus said, wait in the city until you have been clothed with power from on high. That must mean something. And it must mean something that actually equates to the words, to the meaning of those words. Clothed with power from on high. So if there's a key, it's surely that we need to be filled with the Holy Spirit. And, you know, how we manage that as leaders, where we do that, how we do that, and how we create opportunity for that will be varied, dependent on other factors, actually. But that we are getting into the space where we are able to receive from the Spirit, whether it's privately as an individual or whether it's as a community. Because clearly, the personal experience of Evan Roberts and then of William Seymour, both pursuing God, Evan Roberts having these nighttime wonders, and Seymour saying, I still don't, I'm preaching it, but I'm not in it yet. Pray for me, pray for me, pray for me, until the breakthrough came. It spilled across from the individual into the congregational, into the corporate. Now, that's where I think a lot of churches can make mistakes, where you can try and make stuff happen and or cajole and bully and, you know, whatever it is. You can't kind of humanly force that. But I think we can be praying and seeking God and saying, God, come to us as congregations. So if there's any key, I mean, I would have thought it's that. Yeah. Good question. What about numbers for South Africa now? I don't know. So there's been a lot of population change and movement, so I don't have numbers for South Africa. I do know this, though. This is, I mean, if we were nicely placed, this is a warm landing. So if you go to Berlin or even to Holland, which is perhaps... I'm using the word easier, but what I mean is there's a reception of the gospel, and England is warmer still. They are still relatively hard compared to our situation here. People still have a respect for the church and for the gospel and for you as a Christian than in those places. And in some European places, you've got to get through a whole load of resistance points before there's a kind of openness. Here, there's still a wonderful openness. And I think we shouldn't be scaling back on evangelism. we should actually be increasing our intentional communication of the gospel to the non-believer more and more and more, because that door may close. You know, that, and they're finding it now. When I first came to South Africa, I mean, we could preach the gospel on the plaza at UCT. We had people responding for salvation. We would, you know, there'd be performance songs and then preaching, and it was, and now they're struggling to get to the gospel on the campuses. I'm hoping this year God's gonna help us remarkably, but the last few years have been very difficult. Now, if that's a trigger to the future, which it may or may not be, then we need to maximize the open situation that we have outside of the university context. Yeah? It's time. Okay, I believe it. Yeah, I believe it. We've got to take advantage of the freedoms that we have. We can still share the gospel in schools. We can still, you know, in a wise and reasonable and appropriate way, we can still have access. You can still do alpha courses in corporate contexts, in the workplace. I mean, that's amazing. Are you? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I see things about him from time to time on Facebook, some for and some against. So I don't know about that, but I do know as churches, we have got this time. We have got an opportunity to share. Any other questions on this? Yep. Great question. So, saying Cape Town, you mean Somerset West as well. Are we in the global south or are we culturally in the global north? And the answer is we're actually in both. And I think part of our responsibility, if we are building churches that are on a mission, is to not act as though we're in the global north, but to make sure we are actually acting on behalf of the majority of the population as well. So I think that's an internal challenge, but I think we are living in two worlds, and that's just the way it is. So I can happily, who was I talking to about this? I might have been today, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but we can happily receive teaching from someone who's completely in a world like my own little world, but then we've got to mediate the strengths of that teaching into our context. So if we forget the context, we can live in these strange little silos, and I think it's part of the future of the church in South Africa, it's part of the future of South Africa, isn't it, to break those silos open so that there's much more free flow movement at every level of leadership and interaction, right from the you know, the most basic everyday interaction all the way up to high-level leadership in the life of the church. I think that's really, really important. Otherwise, if you're only going for, I mean, let me just be a bit coarse. I know you're not asking this, but if you're only going for the white population, you're going for a shrinking population anyway. So are we not on a mission for everyone? Are we not here to reach the whole population? So that's inclusive. It doesn't discount. It just includes everyone. So I think that is an application and a contextual challenge, because like yourself, I live in both worlds. But I want to identify with actually where I am, not only kind of in my own kind of cultural space. I want to try and open those doors and be part of what God's doing in the global south as well. Sorry, just, yeah, I missed you. Yeah, go for it.
So, if you look at the way the Pentecostal church spread, I mean, there were people that were there for such a short time, and then went off to other countries and started their own churches. And if you look at how the gospel spread, there was still almost a perversion or a loss of the actual true intention of that. If you look at what's happened, that Pentecostal movement eventually slowed down. And if you look at the life of our church, the pending split off from that, how do you make sure that when those people go out, they are still true to the real intention of what slowed down a lot. It didn't continue growing in Wales and in Los Angeles as it did. So
I see. Yeah, so I think what you're saying is, if I understand you rightly, because I think the Pentecostal movement hasn't slowed down. That's the, all the stats are saying this is continuing to explode. But so, and I would think, well, is Pentecostal the right word now, or should we be saying, as Jenkins does, Pentecostal stroke charismatic? But anyway, we know what I'm using Pentecostal as shorthand in a sense. But there are bursts of revival in Wales, and now those buildings are not being used for church. There were bursts of Pentecostal movements in certain places or churches that now are kind of less than they were, and they look back on the heyday. Your question is, how do you stop that? My answer is, I don't want to get to the point where we're having to stop it. I'm wanting to try and generate interest in it, and I think, you know, maybe that is how one way of how you kind of keep. Some of us have been around for a long time. Some of you have been in a church like this for 40-odd years. Part of how you don't just slow down on stop it happening is staying fresh in God yourself. And the other thing is staying evangelistically focused. Most, 9 times out of 10, the edge goes off when the mission kind of takes a... It becomes more about maintaining, you know, legacy, protecting the denomination, than it is about actually getting the gospel out there. So that's why our collaboration as we're Jubilee Community Church, but we've joined with Cape Town Baptist Church, and we're now a kind of a version of that. And for me, I'm not rubbishing the past. In particularly in its kind of waning period, I feel like what we've done in the city congregation is we have unblocked a well that was built and sunk and was flourishing, and over time got blocked up again. We've unblocked that, and now it's flourishing again and it's flowing again. So I think there is scope for not just rebuilding what was before, but seeing the next version of it. And my world, I'm sure like yours, is a world of, you know, upgrades coming, and you want updates and upgrades and all the time, unless you're on Windows. And then, you know, so your expectation is improvement and advance. And that's the kind of the keynote of the thing. And so for me, I want to keep reading this history and being inspired by it, keep getting personally alone with God, and keep giving congregations an opportunity to receive from God, so that we're not trying to stop something slowing down. We're fueling. We're wanting to put ourselves in the place where we can be fueled to go forward. This would have to be the last question. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's really good. How do you make this kind of happen in terms of structures or initiatives and ideas? There's some stuff we've done historically. Let me talk about kind of. So we started this new congregation out of Jubilee. It's a Jubilee congregation, so it's part of Jubilee Community Church. But it's kind of got its own identity. I say that's partly because we're in our own building in the center of Cape Town, in Clough Street. So we're happily positioned on the coolest street in possibly in the whole of the country, actually, he says. So you can see I'm excited about it. So there are a number of different ways. Last Sunday, we're working through Mark. Last Sunday, we got to Mark 1:8. I baptize you with water, says John the Baptist, but one is coming after me, the thong of whose sandal I'm unworthy to untie. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit. And we've got two options there. The one option was to have a ministry time on Sunday morning itself. Now, for us as a new congregation, and we've got, you know, I did a count of it, of the 212 adults that have been coming regularly, for the last few weeks anyway, we're on a little bit of another growth curve. Only 79 are members of Jubilee. So we've got a large number of people who have been with us for probably up to about a year or so, have not yet joined, and some of them are not baptized in the Holy Spirit. So for some, that would be the first kind of clear teaching they've had. But I thought, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, we are who we are, let's do this. So we organized the kids' work to go a bit later, so there was no surprise there. And I don't know, maybe 30 people came forward, maybe even more, maybe 35 people came out to receive prayer, and that was one way that they were receiving. And some were receiving quietly, others, it was very obvious that they were receiving from God, which is great. In addition to that, we've added a Tuesday night. So next Tuesday is an evening meeting, which we've called Empowered by the Spirit. No guests, not a Sunday, no kids' work, nothing. So it's much more for the Christian privately to, or when I say privately, I mean obviously it's a public meeting, but it's without the nervousness of your neighbor being with you or anything like that, or someone else's neighbor who you ought to be concerned about as well, who's in the meeting, who maybe be visiting for the first time. So that will give space as well. The other thing we're planning to do is an evening meeting of just worship. So no agenda, no preaching. Again, this is partly because Zach's with us, we can do this, but just an evening of enjoying the presence of God. And I'm certain that people are going to encounter God at that. And we're road testing that. We'll do that once. We'll see how it feels. And, you know, I don't want to let it get hijacked. The focus is God and receiving. And if that really works well, then we're going to do that regularly. And it's amazing the number of believers who have said, oh, yes, we love that. And that's not for everyone, and it takes administration. You've got to have the right gift to be able to do that. Otherwise, it's just another, you know, another meeting that the whole worship team have got to be there, and they're already busy, and they've all got jobs. So, you know, it needs to be done right. So that would be another time for it. I've been working through the Gospel of John with a non-believer since last March, every Tuesday, just about every Tuesday. He's a trader in the city, and so we meet for like an hour and a half every Tuesday morning over coffee in one of the coffee houses on Clough Street, the trendiest street in the whole nation. And he gave his life to Christ in September. Just mind-blowing. From you know, when I said earlier, look, you know, he's wrestling with this. What about that? What about this? What about the evidence? Blah, blah, blah. Why don't you just pray to Jesus and just say, Jesus, if you're real, you know, just show me. He said, I can't do that. I could never do that. Could I just maybe pray a general prayer to the gods and they can all kind of fight over it, and whichever one, you know, grabs the prayer, they can. I said, okay, that's fine. I know there's only one God, so it's not a problem. But he got wonderfully converted. And with him, because he's a thinker as well, we will take some time talking through the miraculous. But his conversion came in a way that was kind of supernatural for him. And he came. I took him to an evangelistic type meeting, and he asked the speaker, should I, you know, if this is true, shouldn't there be a supernatural evidence for me to know that there is a God? I would want to see some kind of supernatural sign of something. And remarkably, the speaker said no. And I just thought, oh, that's a mistake. And then someone in the congregation gave her testimony about being from a Hindu background, and her sister was sick. They took her everywhere, doctors all over the place, and then all the various different religious things. And then the brother said, there's a Christian in my workplace. I told him, and he said he'd come and pray. The Christian guy prayed for the sister. The sister was wonderfully healed. This is the short version of the story, wonderfully healed. And the whole family, parents and all the siblings, gave their lives to Christ. And so that kind of answered the, no, you don't need a supernatural thing, because you do. You read C.S. Lewis. He says you've got to start with the supernatural. You get rid of the supernatural, you've lost everything. So I'm going to have to work that through with him. But so I think there's a mix. There's providing corporate context, providing moments which are, I mean, testimonies of healing we do at the city. So if someone's healed, wait a little while, make sure the testimony's clear. And so we had a testimony last Sunday about someone who was prayed for a long-standing knee problem. She wasn't able to run, gloriously healed, completely free. It's just constantly feeding back in that these things are available to us. They're not a million miles away. They're right here and right now and available. Should we stand together and just pray?